This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things Mardi Gras. I mean, All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll get a quick lesson on bead history, from precious throws to the controversial Forever Lee circle beads. Then, Tegan Wendland finds out what happens when carnival throws become street trash and what city officials plan to do to protect gutters along the parade route. And later, we'll take a trip to New Orleans East for the ultimate carnival treat. We're talking king cake at Dongfang Bakery. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us. Mardi Gras is heading into full swing, with the crews stacking up on throws to toss to the crowds. WWNO's Eileen Fleming caught up with Mardi Gras historian Arthur Hardy for a history lesson.
In Creole Carnival, before there were parades, just maskers on the street and carriages, they would throw things to people up on the balcony, flowers, not the kind of stuff you bake with, and candies and things. Then the first recorded throws in 1871, 12th Night Revelers had a parade, and Santa Claus was in the last float and threw gifts out. But it wasn't really formalized. 1881, there's some reference to Rex throwing peanuts. But it did not become an annual custom, according to Henri, till 1921. Individual people had thrown things, but in 1921, everybody in Rex threw something. We think beads. And you can tell because in 1920, people are watching the floats and pictures with their hands down. In 1921, they've got their hands up. So we can credit Rex for starting it as an annual tradition.
What were some of those early throws?
Well, once it became more formalized, the best throw was utilitarian. It was beads, necklaces, people that you know, women could wear.
They were made out of glass, though, right?
They were made.
Why didn't they break?
Well, they did, and that's one of the reasons they eventually stopped doing it. They were made in Japan and Czechoslovakia, and eventually plastic replaced them. Plush items now are really very, very popular. You know, we've become jaded now. Throws have to speak and make our groceries for us. You know, we don't want them. I mean, you see good stuff just laying in the gutter. I'm not going to pick that up.
What do you expect for this year and coming years?
Who knows where it's going to go? I mean, again, people are expecting bigger and better throws that light up and do things. A lot of credit goes to the Rex organization, which really threw the first emblem throw, something that had the Rex, the crew name on it and the theme. 1960, Rex started doubloons. And then from there, eventually we got cups and emblem beads, and now we have individual parade items like the Muse's shoe. You know, we've had the Zulu coconut since the 1915s, and that's a signature item. But each year, every crew tries to outdo the other. Iris has sunglasses, Nix has purses. I don't know where it's going to end, but it sure is fun.
Has it ever become political?
Well, by law, it's not supposed to be political.
Well, some may say it's political this year, not in float displays, but in the beads themselves. Eileen caught up with Charles Marsala of Save NOLA Heritage at Lee Circle, the site of the last of four Confederate monuments removed last year. A group called Forever Lee Circle sold 6,000 strands of beads designed showing the general back on his column above the words Forever Lee Circle. Marsala isn't involved in producing the beads, but he's pleased they're circulating. He explains his support for the designer, who remains anonymous.
Some people may not want them. The people that want them might be asking for a Lee Circle bead. I don't know the person who did that, what their full intent was, but it did create a talking point that, you know, for us to engage people like yourself and other media to say, hey, you know, we have this situation that has been unresolved.
New Orleans police are reminding people who don't want the beads that throwing anything back at a parade participant is against the law and carries a $250 fine. It's carnival time, which means trash. Lots of it. And it turns out that's not great for the city's struggling drainage system. Officials are making an effort to cut down on how much gets into the gutters this year. WWNO's Tegan Wendland talked with interim head of the Department of Public Works, Danny Galloway, about the challenges the season poses for the city and what officials are doing about it.
After the flooding this summer, the city did make this big effort to clean out the catch basins. A few weeks ago, you announced an astounding amount of Mardi Gras beads in catch basins along St. Charles, about 93,000 pounds, I want to say. So what was your motivation in making this sort of a public announcement?
Well, I think, you know, the more you know, really, at the end of the day. And in my case, that was an interesting challenge because the drainage system on that part of St. Charles is a French drain system that doesn't exist anywhere else along the avenue.
What's a French drainage system?
So it is a drain which kind of like a grate on the top that catches everything as it goes down, and the holes are a lot smaller on that part of St. Charles. It's done that way because of the streetcar track that exists on St. Charles. You can't have, you know, a very deep drainage system because of the stability of the roadway. Vacuum trucks can clean the other catch basins, which are what people are more familiar with, like the 2x3 big metal lid, which we can pop out and get in there and clean that. Whereas the French drain system, you can't just pop those drains, those grates out. You have to figure out something else. So we put our heads together with the contractor and my staff, and we actually developed a metal hook to go in there and loosen everything up with the water and then just pull everything out with this metal hook. I know it sounds, you know, pretty low impact, but it was incredibly impactful. And I just sat there and I was blown away by what was in there. And we just kept pulling Mardi Gras beads after Mardi Gras beads.
Only in New Orleans.
Only in New Orleans. Another New Orleans moment. But
and were they Mardi Gras beads from many years or were they pretty recent?
It was hard to tell. You know, there was so many of them. And so we actually pulled them all up. And I was like, okay, now that I know this, we have to do something different for this year's Mardi Gras.
So talk about that. What are you doing different?
So we actually needed a low-cost alternative. We can't obviously cover the entire drainage system because we need the water to still flow. We thought about putting like a geotextile fabric, which enables the water to flow but keeps the debris on top. And then we did a couple of tests with like buckets of water and the water wasn't going down soon enough.
Wow.
Yes. So we decided, well, that probably is not the right path. So we went to Home Depot and looked at some of the metal grates that they had, made sure they were small enough to, to catch the beads but let everything out, the water through. And then we did a metal grate with a 1x4 to make sure that it didn't move and the street sweepers and the cleaning crew could work around them.
So temporary grates that you're adding.
It's temporary. It's like a metal grate on top of a metal grate to make sure that the smaller beads don't go by, especially because there's a lot of stands over there and everything kind of falls through the stands right into the drainage system right there. So yeah, so we protected all that and so far so good. I went out there on Friday night and it worked out.
So have you considered, you know, calling on crews to actually cut down on the amount of stuff that they're throwing, or could city council ban certain types of throws? You're making a face right now.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in my lane, but I think I can honestly say one thing I was very, you know, heartened to see this weekend is I walked, you know, the length and breadth of the parade route. There were a lot of people recycling. Now that people know the impacts of, you know, what goes into our drainage system and where it ends up and our challenges, I think they've taken some ownership as well. I saw a lot of people moving beads out of the front of our catch basins, and that was really exciting to see because, I mean, they were literally taking their feet and moving stuff away from it. So, yeah, it was pretty exciting to see because, I mean, I've done, you know, Mardi Gras in the same spot for the last 20 years, and there was, you know, kids picking up beads and putting them in bags and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it was good to see. So
give me some perspective here. I mean, Mardi Gras kind of changed over time, and especially the throws have, from memorabilia to literal trash. I mean, if a bead touches the ground, people don't really pick it up anymore. So has the problem become worse over the years?
I mean, I think it has because there's so much more of it. You know, my husband and his family who, you know, grew up here would talk about getting, you know, a couple of pairs of glass beads and, you know, treasuring them because that's all they got. I have two children of my own, you know, who if they don't get like a big bead will be like, oh, or they'll like give it away to somebody else. So I think the expectation has changed a little bit over the years, but hopefully now that more people know about the impacts, they'll at least recycle the beads.
So Carnival must pose some other infrastructure challenges as well, you know, with the huge influx of traffic and tourists coming to town. How does the city prepare and how do agencies sort of collaborate to manage all of this?
We actually have a well-oiled machine when it comes to Mardi Gras planning. We probably start way back in the summer. We have a lot of internal meetings. Safety and permits kind of takes the lead in getting all the permitting and stuff done through them. We meet very regularly. NOPD events pretty much coordinates all the traffic along with our traffic department. We put about 3,000 signs out for like no parking and things like that. It's really a logistical nightmare in most ways, but you know, between NOPD and sanitation and the emergency operations center, which now we have at the real-time crime center, and there's, you know, a number of our city, state, and federal partners all in the same space so that we're able to share information as it happens. Every year we've gotten better and better at it.
With the city kind of as vulnerable as it is right now, drainage issues and damage from freezing temperatures last month, are officials worried at all as we head into this big weekend for tourism?
No, I don't believe so. I think we've had several tabletops and we've, you know, planned for the worst of it. So everybody knows what their role is and what we are supposed to do in those events. So we've had a few tabletop exercises that address all of that. That's been coordinated by the emergency operations and Homeland Security. So I think we are in a good place. You know, I think we all know what our role is and what we're supposed to do if something bad happens.
Everybody's ready to party.
In the meantime, the party will go on.
Thank you, Danny Galloway, Interim Director of the Department of Public Works.
Thank you.
The city has installed homemade bright orange gutter buddies and drainage grates along some parade routes, and officials encourage people to help by picking up beads and trash. You can also drop beads off for recycling at stations along the St. Charles route. With Mardi Gras comes delicious tradition, king cakes. Each year, New Orleanians boast about who does it best. This year, everyone's talking about Dong Fong Bakery in New Orleans East, with a king cake to die for. My colleague Travis Lux and I took a trip deep in the East to see what all the fuss is about. As we drove up Chef Mentor, we noticed dozens of cars parked in the emergency lanes of the highway. Hundreds of people were in line for the carnival treat, so I asked a few of them what flavor they hoped to get.
I'd like to get cream cheese.
Actually, I want to see if they have the blueberry.
Apple.
Hopefully a pecan, but I'm told they sell out quick, so I'm excited. Hopefully I'll get a pecan. We'll see what happens. If not, we'll go with blueberry.
Well, at the rate that we're going, I'm probably going to be able to accept whatever they have. You know, bakers can't be choosy.
That's right. That's right. Bakers can't be choosy when you're trying to get your hands on a king cake from Dong Fong Bakery. The folks I met standing in line have chosen to make the ultimate carnival sacrifice, just like this nun with the Sisters of the Holy Family.
I'm standing here to sacrifice myself for the king cakes.
Just another sacrifice, huh, sister?
That's right, that's right.
It's a tough sacrifice.
It is tough, yes, it is. But as long as it makes them happy, so that's good. I've been here since 7.
About an hour and a half.
Yes, an hour and a half. But it's fun. It's nice seeing other people, you know, kind of come out and meet and greet everybody. And it only comes once a year, so, you know, what the heck, you know? Yeah. Might as well have the fun of it.
Thanks, sister.
You're welcome.
As we continued walking past the line, we finally met up with Dong Fong manager Arthur Laughlin, who took us inside for a quick tour.
Hey, I'm Travis Lux.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Oh my God, it is heaven right here, right now.
Yeah, this is the secret supply here of our pickup orders.
Yes, you heard right. A secret supply of king cakes. Arthur tells us more.
So overnight, one of our head decorators, she stopped decorating king cakes to sort this out. So this, over here we have piles of plain cream cheese, pecan, and then we have a tiny stash of the secret flavors, which are the blueberry cream cheese and the strawberry cream cheese. And then this is for our retail. This is for us to sell. This is what we can touch. We can't touch any of this for what we're selling outside. Only my friend Nancy here, who's she's running all the pre-orders. So she's got a master list And if your name's on the list and your order's for to pick up today, she's going to go fetch it. Before we were, it was a little bit slower, so we could like pre-package your order, like pre-bag it. Now we just need to just create this kind of distribution center operation going on.
When did it get this hectic?
So it got this hectic last week. I was doing my regular job in the office and my boss calls me and she goes, have you seen the security camera? And I'm like, what? And they go, we had a line, instead of going up towards Chef Mentor Highway, we had it going out of our little store on the corner of Chef all the way down to almost to the bayou back here. So she goes, you need to do something.
You guys opened in 1982. With that said, when did you guys start doing king cakes?
They started making king cakes in 2008. It was after they got back on their feet after Katrina. And the goal was to introduce Carnival to the Vietnamese community because, I mean, primarily this store was like a anchor store for the community here and they serviced the community. And then the bread business grew throughout the whole city, but still the main thing was people were coming here from the neighborhood and from the other Vietnamese communities to buy their products. So they said, let's start selling king cakes to them so that they can experience Carnival out here in New Orleans East.
Okay.
Tour time?
Tour time.
Tour time.
We are now walking into the kitchen at Dong Phong Bakery.
We're going to walk into the main king cake production room, which is here. Right here, we have our big mixing bowls. This is where we're going to mix the flour, the salt, the yeast to make the brioche. Okay, and once it's mixed into a dough, it's going to be divided and it's going to be portioned out into certain size containers. Then we let it rise a little bit before we shape it. Then it's going to be folded once, which is over here where he's going to fold it into a dough. It's going to be wrapped, it's going to rest, and then it's going to be folded again, and that's where we're going to fold the butter into it. We put it in the similar machine, fold it again and again, make it rest until we're ready to finally fold it a third time, and then that we can turn it into these king cakes where they're going to be dusted with cinnamon. They're going to be filled with our secret sauce, and then it's either going to be a plain, a pecan, a cream cheese, or one of the special flavors. And then it's shaped into a king cake right over there, and it's allowed to rest. And depending on where we are in our baking stage, it either goes into a proofer oven to grow, or it gets arrested in the refrigerator where they stop the rising process until they're ready. And then they go in here into our baking ovens. We have three baking ovens, and the king cakes roll in on carts. They go in 32 at a time, and then we wait about 3 hours, and then we can ice them and decorate them and box them.
So how long is this complete process?
24 hours. So it takes a day to make a king cake.
It takes a day to make the perfect king cake.
Yes, it does.
And I understand that you guys stopped delivery.
So we stopped shipping right away. We realized that the demand was too high and we wouldn't be able to meet the needs of the people outside in our retail business, nor our wholesalers. We realized we're not going to be able to meet the demand. And then unfortunately, we realized last week we weren't going to be able to meet the demand of our wholesalers.
I know Pizza Nola, that was the spot for Dong Phong cakes. Not anymore.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have people waiting from 5:30 in the morning now out in the cold today just to get a chance to get a king cake. And we owe it to them to give them the opportunity to buy every single cake. Because unfortunately, we can only make 1,000 king cakes a day and we sell 1,000 king cakes.
So with 1,000 king cakes said, you're nominated for a James Beard Award this year. Let's talk about that a bit.
We got called about 2.5 months ago to let us know that we were in the running for the James Beard Award. And then we had no idea. I mean, we were so ecstatic just to be recognized. And then once it was officially announced, we had no idea what we were getting into, what the response was going to be. And what it did was it brought the business here. So people who already knew about Dong Phong were coming already. People who liked our retail banh mi and our restaurant knew us. But now everybody was coming to check us out and they want to peek through the window, watch the magic happen, and it's been amazing. And it's really done a great job for New Orleans East because it's helping people rediscover or discover for the first time this part of New Orleans.
Now, Arthur, I know we've been here doing this interview, but do you have a king cake for little old me?
We have a king cake for you.
Arthur Laughlin, manager at Dong Fong Restaurant and Bakery. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on NPR.
You can see what all the fuss is about by visiting Dong Fong Bakery at 14207 Chef Mature Highway. And special thanks to my colleague Travis Lux, who assisted me during my Dong Fong adventure. Last fall, Jose Torres became the first New Orleanian to take sanctuary in a church to avoid deportation. Jose is a community leader with the Congress of Day Laborers, a group of immigrant workers and families who helped to rebuild the city after Hurricane Katrina. NOLA V's Sarah Holtz spoke with Jose at First Grace Methodist Church.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Jose Torres. Soy líder del Congreso de Jornaleros.
I met Jose shortly after he moved into First Grace, and we sat around a table in one of the church's classrooms. Jose's English is really good, but his Spanish is poetic. So Rachel Tabor translated for me.
Hi, my name's Rachel Tabor. I'm an organizer at the Congress of Day Laborers.
As Jose began to tell his story, his eyes softened, and I could tell that this is a story many years in the making.
Soy padre de familia de dos niñas ciudadanas.
Well, I'm a dad. I'm a head of a family. I have two, you know, little girls who were born here in the United States. My youngest, so she's 2 years old, and she was born prematurely. And because of that, she has a complicated seizure condition. You know, they have those documents. Authorities are aware that she has this life-threatening medical condition, but it doesn't matter to them. Well, maybe it doesn't matter to them, but it matters to me because I'm her dad. This is my daughter. These are my girls. This is my life. You know, knowing that you have these beautiful little girls waiting for you at home is what inspires you to get up in the morning and go to work, to keep going no matter what it takes, you know, to make sure your family is moving forward and doing well and is provided for.
Soy una persona que he luchado.
So I'm a person who has fought every day, day to day, to rebuild this city. We've sweated a lot. We've worked hard. We've invested too much to be told now that we can't remain in this city that we have rebuilt. When I came to the United States, I was only 18 years old. And I came fleeing from so much injustice, from rampant crime that is just ravaging the country I was born in. You can't move from city to city the way we do here, you know, just easily, right? With the peace of mind that you'll return home safe. There, doing that would risk your life because of how much crime there is. And, you know, life is so fragile, right? You can die in an instant. So I decided I was going to survive. You know, arriving in the United States, you know, I think of that river, the Rio Grande, and this river is a barrier. It's this barrier between two worlds. I can remember when I crossed that river seeing so many, you know, shoes and clothes and t-shirts, you know, strewn about and knowing that each one was one person's dream and not knowing whether they made it here or not.
Yo soy sobreviviente de tráfico humano. Sigo luchando porque... quiero mi día en corte.
I'm a survivor of human trafficking.
No lo he tenido, pero...
And what I'm fighting for is my day in court. I never had that chance. And so that's my fight. That's what I'm fighting for here in Sanctuary.
In light of the dangers that exist beyond the walls of First Grace, Jose's attitude is cautious, especially after he received word from the authorities about his case. Here's Rachel with an update.
We just received notice that they are not granting the stay at this time. But we have hope as he continues to fight his case, as we continue to organize and involve more people, that this movement can grow.
And this collaboration between Jose, Congreso, and the greater community helps to renew Jose's faith for the time being.
Seguimos en la lucha. Me siento bendecido por Dios.
So the fight continues. You know, I have two lawyers who are supporting me. And it helps a lot knowing that I'm not alone, that so many people are supporting me. So I have hope that one day I will return to my family.
Y que nos miren como seres humanos.
We just want to be seen as human beings. And I think that our society has lost sight of that. We need to focus on, you know, this fight that we all share.
Si se puede.
In New Orleans, I'm Sarah Holtz.
And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Visit our website to check out previous shows and be sure to catch us next week right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us and happy Mardi Gras.